Hello again, I'm Don Hill. On today's tapestry, God's Hiding Place, a spiritual Mecca in the mountains of Colorado.
Why are people attracted to any magical locale on the planet? There's just some sort of energetic quality here. Many are called, few are chosen. A lot of people come here with money, with great ideas, and they slink out of here because they can't take the silence, for instance. People can't deal with their own internal voice and their own internal dialogue. Coming from a city to this place is a major leap, and most people that I encounter can't handle that.
Writer Christopher O'Brien. He's one of the hundreds of seekers who dropped whatever they were doing and moved to the middle of nowhere in southern Colorado. It's here, in the shadow of pristine peaks and stillness, a unique spiritual community has taken root, a gathering of wisdom traditions from around the world.
Basically, one of the key elements of what's happening in Crestone, and the reason we have invited these traditions there. There is so many untruths in the world that there would be one place where people from no matter what tradition they came from would be able to come and get the absolute truth from that tradition.
That's Hannah Strong, and she's the principal force driving the Manitou Foundation, a private philanthropy that has given away land and cash to religious groups who have come to the Sangria de Cristo Mountains, the Blood of Christ Mountains, in the San Luis Valley in Colorado. It's a very unusual place, an odd bit of geography with a puzzling reputation, a place of power that I've visited on two separate occasions and have left changed for the experience. I'll tell you that story over the next hour on Tapestry. Hannah Strong is married to a Canadian, Maurice Strong, the former chairman of Ontario Hydro and Petro-Canada, convener of the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, and by his own account, a fellow deeply concerned with the fate of the planet. His new book speaks to this. Where on Earth Are We Going? Is his call for environmental action before time runs out. While Maurice Strong is off saving the material world, his wife Hannah is most concerned with matters of the spirit. And for over a decade, she's vetted applications from religious groups attracted by the Manitou Foundation's invitation to preserve spiritual truth in the mountains of Colorado. Hannah Strong is bent on establishing a preserve of spiritual expertise in these Rockies. And thus far, a growing community of monasteries, ashrams and zendos, retreat and religious centers has cloistered in the mountains overlooking Crestone, Colorado. Just finding your way into this valley requires a major commitment, and I've come a couple thousand miles to do a profile on Hannah Strong and Crestone. It's surprising to find so much blank in America. After a long drive, my rental car winding up and down through tight mountain passes, very slow going, then speeding dead straight over a 100-mile stretch, it's still miles in America. I traveled an unbroken line, as flat can be, through semi-arid desert, mountains on either side, over an hour of this. My God, I said to myself, I'm doing 100 miles an hour. No cops, no cars, nothing. I restrain the impulse to speed too fast. I turn off the main road, more miles into the blank, and a postage stamp sign says, I'm in Crestone. There's not much here. A few vintage buildings, lots of cottonwood trees, a dog in the middle of the street. Very quiet. Crestone and its neighbor, they call it the Baca, is a faded old mining community, a hamlet now. The glory days of gold and silver well behind it. no evidence of things spiritual around here, but lots of history, that's for sure.
The southern end of the valley around the Taos, New Mexico area would be the furthest incursion into North America by the original Spanish movement into North America, say the 1580s through the 1720s, basically.
This is Christopher O'Brien, longtime resident and author of The Mysterious Valley.
The Indians seemed to already know about Jesus. They had their hands clasped in many cases, were on their knees waiting for the Spaniards to arrive. And one very interesting little-known story that I was able to do some pretty good research on was the story of Sister Marie Jesus Agreda from Spain. She claimed 502 times that she bilocated from her convent in Spain and Christianized, basically, the Indians in the New World. And, of course, she was put on trial by the Inquisition and was... right in the middle of the trial when the conquistadores arrived back to Spain claiming that the Indians said this lady floating in a blue mist would come and speak to them in their own language and tell them about Christ and that her brethren were coming to baptize them. So they were all ready to be baptized. Some of them had even fashioned rudimentary crosses. This may explain why 22 missions were established in less than 3 years, I think, or 3 or 4 years in the whole New Mexico territory here, and why it was so easy for the Spanish to subjugate the Indian peoples of the Southwest.
Christopher O'Brien's history lesson is reminiscent of a first contact story I learned about in British Columbia. In her documentary, Bowl of Bone, filmmaker Jean-Marie Martel recounts how the interior Salish people immediately acquiesced to Christian missionaries carrying the cross into Indian territory. The specter of a cross was familiar to Salish shamans, John Marie told me in a phone conversation. It came to them during their vision quests. So they took the sign as evidence of the priest's authority, a signal from the divine. An unfortunate mistake, she said.
The San Luis Valley specifically, however, has a very exalted tradition in many of the tribes that dot the Rio Grande River Valley. They're the remnants of the Anasazi, or the ancient ones, that were the great Pueblo builders. But essentially, they believe that they emerged from underground and were shown by the Creator, given directions in the form of portents in the sky of which direction to go to populate the planet. And that just before the Earth is going to cleanse herself, the Indians are then given portents in the sky and told to go back to the place of emergence and go underground, where they're cared for, in one or two tribes' traditions, by ant people. And that place of emergence is 20 miles from where we're sitting.
I got to thinking about the ant people. I had a chance to explore an underground cavern in nearby New Mexico. It's like a kind of twilight zone, an intermediate world. The interior of the cavern, dark, silent, forbidding is a good word to use, is also iconic, a kind of fairyland, where images in stone, faces, bodies, hands, appear and disappear. You get an idea how the story of the ant people might have arisen. A sanctuary, I thought. And not just for those who live below. According to Christopher O'Brien, the San Luis Valley is hospitable to all kinds of travelers.
There is, without question in my mind, something flying around here. Whether it is little green men from Mars or little grays from Zeta Reticuli is open to quite lively debate. But there is a tradition here of aerial objects. For instance, some of our fireball-type phenomena, which tend to be the most prevalent objects seen, they range in size from huge green-colored balls of light or fire, orangish-colored ones, reddish-colored ones that tend to be smaller, and these are the ones that are most often seen as being something high strange. Oftentimes, the Spanish-speaking communities, which, again, are some of the oldest European families in North America, have traditions of witches that are riding fireballs, and that the fireballs are nothing more than a witch on an express train getting somewhere from A to B in a real big hurry.
I've lived in Crestone about 34 years now. When I first came up here, you couldn't get a propane truck up here. And
I'm walking the streets of Crestone. There are four. With Katie Snyder. She's a no-nonsense, in-your-face kind of personality. Thin, short, keeps her hair blonde. The lines on her face betray years of living in the harsh, dry climate of the mountain air. Her intense blue eyes look straight into you, and there's this sense if you don't meet her gaze head-on, well, she'll size you up as a sissy or some such no-account. I liked her instantly. Katie knows the stories about lights in the sky, inexplicable cattle mutilations, strange spirits. She's heard them all, and then some.
I've never seen anything out of the ordinary here. I just haven't. It's ridiculous. You go down to the San Luis Valley, and you want to be very careful what you do. Sometimes you... It's like, oh, where are you from? Crestone. Oh. Well, Crestone is just a little tiny town of 50 people. We're broad range right here, but mostly retired people. The spiritual community is not in the center of Crestone. It's not here. This is a little township.
Crestone and the nearby Baca acquired its reputation for high, strange weirdness, honestly. On the extreme edge of town are miles and miles of sand dunes, some as high as 700 feet. It's a geographic anomaly, a fancy way of saying experts can't say with certainty why the great sand dunes are there. And they are strange. Walking out over the sand, endless, it seems, the dunes stretch and roll over the horizon line. You can hear a low-pitched moan. Listen. That's pretty weird, huh? It prompts questions about this place. Questions I put to Ranger Patrick Myers of the National Park Service at the Great Sand Dunes near Crestone.
Hey. Is there any explanation for the strange lights that are over the dunes every once in a while?
I've been here 7 years. I've never seen any, but during windstorms, it does create an electrostatic conditions where your hair stands on end. You could get a little bit of sparks and things like that. Possibly St. Elmo's fire in the right conditions.
Really?
And occasionally, in a real violent windstorm, you'll see plumes of sand going up 10 or 15 feet. I think when you get a bunch of little grains blowing like that, it somehow creates an electrostatic effect.
So, how and why did Hannah Strong, wife of a Canadian mover and shaker in planetary affairs, and in her own right, a world-class designer, come to locate herself in such an out-of-the-way and reputedly odd place? In the late 1970s, Marie Strong acquired control of a bankrupt land venture in the San Luis Valley. More about that later. I figured it must have been the business that brought Hannah out here. Nothing of the sort, the plain-spoken grandmother and still rather striking blonde tells me. I had a brush with death, she said.
In 1971, I was living in New York at this, it was called the Anzonia. It's an old, beautiful building that was built at the turn of the century to house opera singers. And there was ballet studios, you know, for artists. And these apartments were just unbelievable, gorgeous. I mean, I lived in an old ballet studio, and I had like 250 plants in my living room. At that time, I had this design firm in New York. You know, very glamorous openings, architects. But, you know, there was something missing. So one night I'm walking home, and I'm walking right along the building that I'm living in, and I feel this wind on my face and this huge crash. I looked down at my feet, and you know, if I'd been like one split second ahead of myself, I wouldn't have been here today. Is this huge boulder that fell off the balcony on the 17th floor of this building. So I said, okay, this must be a little warning. I'm not living the way I should. I'm not doing what I should be doing. So I go up to my apartment, I open the windows, and I surrender my life to the highest force in the universe, God, the divine key energy, whatever you want to call it. And I just ask, you know, help to perfect myself, to so I can be a tool, you know, that can be used, you know. And it was like overnight, everything changed.
Well, not quite overnight. In 1976, Hannah followed her husband Maurice out to Calgary, where at the behest of the government of the day, Trudeau's Liberals, he ran Petro-Canada. While Maurice trolled the oil patch, Hannah befriended First Nations medicine men, played host to Tibetan lamas at the family ranch west of the city, and followed her spiritual stars. She took the bodhisattva vow of Buddhism. Maurice ditched his Petro-Canada gig, but a failed attempt at federal politics in southern Ontario persuaded him to chase some cash. He acquired, sight unseen, a bankrupt land company in the middle of nowhere, the Baca in Colorado.
That's what he did. And we moved straight from Calgary down to the valley. I just drove down with my mother and kids and dogs and cats in the car. And 2 days later, we arrived in the valley, eagles coming to greet us.
It's almost like you wandered into, you know, Shangri-La.
Well, it's, you know, it does feel a little bit like another dimension.
It was appropriate that Hannah Strong first caught sight of the Baca, Crestone, and the San Luis Valley from the air. Jetting around Maurice's real estate holdings, she was awed by the beauty of the mountains, the valley. "I knew I had come home," she said. And in 1978, home it was, a ranch house at first. Soon after moving in, Glenn Anderson, a wild-looking mountain man, banged on her front door. Locals called him the Prophet.
He was about 84 at the time. He knocks on the door, he looks at me, and he says, "I've been waiting for you to arrive." I said, "What?" So anyway, he looked harmless, so I invited him in. He spent 4 days telling me exactly what was going to happen there. First of all, he said, all the great traditions will come together here. Then he said, you're going to build 4 or 5 solar villages to demonstrate to the world that it's possible to live a very simple lifestyle that's sustainable. You don't have to destroy the planet, you know, with renewable energy, no waste, organic farming, you know, where you live so lightly on the earth that you don't destroy it. And to do this, of course, you have to evolve spiritually, because the more evolved you are spiritually, the less you need physically, because you're so full and happy inside that you don't need all these consumer goods that the world is running after like mad.
You're not taken up with the stuff of the world.
No, I'm not. I see it for what it is, toys. This place is a spiritually protected place. He said, no matter what happens outside in this world, whether it's nuclear or climatic changes, he went to details. He said, this place is protected. This is where the people of spirit will come. And he said, there'll be a lot of enlightened beings here at that time. And your job is to manifest this, and this place is where you will help bring forth a new civilization of beings that have good hearts, that live lightly on the earth, you know, the new human.
What else has been prophesied?
Well, that...
Is this going to be a happy story, or am I going to get really sad and grouchy?
No, this is an extremely happy story. One of the prophecies is that there'll be a lot of children coming in, young people. And, you know, my pet project is working with young people. And we call it the Earth's Restoration Corps. You know, basically teaching the next generation how to restore their own consciousness, find the meaning in life. You know, why are kids so alienated? I mean, you know, it's unbelievable what's going on with the next generation. They are getting angry. I mean, you know, they know we're destroying everything. They have no say in anything. Nobody's listening to them. So this would really give the tools to the next generation to restore themselves, become one with the universe and with the earth and with themselves. Learn very specific skills in restoring ecological systems, you know, the soils, the forests, the lakes, the rivers, everything we have destroyed. You know, we need to really start a major, major effort to restore it. And then the last part of the program is to teach them how to make a livelihood in sustainable development, you know, whether it's natural energy, natural house building, natural farming. How can you make a good livelihood? Doesn't have to be, you know, just inferior. A good livelihood, living in a way that doesn't destroy anything.
Hannah Strong is a fabulous woman.
This is Cyril Soshin. She's the grand dame of the Sri Aurobindo Center in Crestone and a longtime friend of Hannah Strong.
When Hannah approached me, she said that she was going to found this center, this refuge for world truths, in the Bloodless Valley. And the Bloodless Valley refers to the San Luis Valley as a place where the Native Americans put down their arms, and there was no bloodshed while they were together here. And she also told me that the San Luis Valley was referred to as the Valley of Dreams, and that indeed is what it's turned out to be. Not only dreams of the night's sleep, but one's conscious dreams of belonging to the divine alone, the infinite that is our source, and eternally through timelessness, our protector and guide.
This is Tapestry on CBC Radio 1, and this week you're listening to a profile of a unique spiritual haven in the mountains of Colorado. With grants from her Manitou Foundation, Hannah Strong seeded the ground for a new religious fellowship. Tibetan and Zen Buddhists, Hindu and Christian contemplatives, representatives of wisdom traditions with unbroken lineage, were rewarded with free land. She's not at all interested in New Age expressions of spirituality. Those guys are a dime a dozen, she says. If there's preferential treatment, Manitou Foundation favors traditional religious practices with a strong foundation in mysticism.
I'm Father Dave Denny, and I'm the chaplain here at Spiritual Life Institute, which is mostly known as Nada Hermitage in Crestone, Colorado. We chose the name Nada because that's a word that comes from Spanish, a Spanish word used a lot by St. John of the Cross to describe the sense of humility, the sense of one's relative nothingness in relation to the allness of God. And so the desert has always been an important part of Christian monastic tradition. And in the desert, one gets this tremendous sense of nada, nothingness. There's huge, vast wastelands and a gigantic sky, and one feels pretty small in relation to all that. So nada is a very important term in the mysticism of St. John of the Cross, who was a 16th century Carmelite Spanish mystic.
The Carmelite monastery is on the lip of a semi-arid desert, the mountains at its back. You can see weather systems forming out over the middle distance. The steeple adorning the simple yet aesthetically pleasing chapel, its cross at the apex, whistles in the ever-present wind. It's warm this morning, promises to be hot later in the day. Father Dave and I retreat to the library. Books of every subject circle the large, spacious room, which doubles as the monastery's meal hall.
I often think big corporations put a lot of money into research and development, and they have these incredibly complex and expensive laboratories where they do certain kinds of work. Well, in any of the great world religious traditions, there have always been laboratories of exploration of the meaning of life, the meaning of God, the meaning of love, the meaning of relationship, of community. So we feel that monastic life is really the heart of a culture, and if it falls apart, if it disappears, then a culture loses its moorings, and it tends to drift.
The need for quiet is a serious pursuit, and it's a quality of place that's increasingly rare to find. Father Dave Denny and his fellow Carmelites were chased out of the Nova Scotia woods in 1995 by the round-the-clock buzz of timber harvesters and chainsaws. Their hermitage, Nova Nada, was shuttered after a showdown over logging. It's the second time they've been forced to vacate. Another one of their monasteries, in Arizona, closed its doors too after Sedona, a ravishingly beautiful and popular destination, became overrun with tourists.
The most radical way to challenge one's way of thinking and being is to spend some time in the desert. And then one is purified and cleansed and kind of shocked by how deluded one is. And in the midst of that humility, then a new kind of vision erupts, and then we have something to offer to the society at large. There's an old story that our founder, Father McNamara, likes to tell of people who were in a culture in which everybody was starving, just about to starve. The only thing left to eat would keep them alive, but it would also drive them crazy. So they set aside just a little bit of wheat that was healthy and kept a few people sane, and then they fed other people all the other stuff that drove them crazy, but they needed three or four people who remembered that everyone was crazy. And in a sense, that's what happens to any culture. At some point, a certain madness takes hold, and we become so arrogant, so self-sure, we forget God, we forget the deep roots of our tradition, and then every once in a while you need a few people who say, wait a minute, don't forget that our root is in love, in community, in communion, in justice, in mercy. And then there's a chance of renewal and renovation.
The Crestone area, the San Luis Valley, has a reputation. And depending upon what you want to believe or choose to believe, is there something about the actual place itself? Are there subtle energies here that some speak to that influence your practice?
Monks have always sought beautiful places. And you notice in the Bible, the great encounters with God, the great epiphanies, theophanies, are usually on a mountaintop or in the desert or on the seaside. So those are places where I think natural beauty and that intuition of the sacred come together. So to me, that's just normal. And that's another reason, I think, going back to something you asked earlier about what's the purpose of having places like this. I think it's because in our tradition, when we need to get back to the fundamental relationship with God, we find these beautiful natural surroundings.
I'm Don Hill, and this is Tapestry on CBC Radio 1. Crestone isn't Shangri-La. All is not inner peace and love here. Sometimes people escape to the valley. The resident Roshi at the Crestone Zen Center, Richard Baker, used to be the former head guy at America's largest Zendo in San Francisco, until he got caught up in a relationship with a female student. No laws were broken, but a bitter controversy erupted among his Bay Area Zen students, which prompted the Roshi's departure, and he ended up in the San Luis Valley. And out here, who a person was doesn't much matter. The valley is a refuge for people looking for a fresh start.
Okay, my name is Naya Onehart. I've lived here in Crestone for about 3 months, and I drove out here and took a giant leap of faith that if this is where I was meant to be, then spirit was going to move whatever was needed in order for me to make myself at home here. And really everything fell into place within 24 hours. I mean, it was really miraculous. And it worked out perfectly. I mean, I kind of rolled into town and right into the trailer. And it was furnished. You know, all I had was what was in my car. So it was really perfect.
Why are people attracted to any magical locale on the planet?
This is Christopher O'Brien, longtime resident and author of The Mysterious Valley.
There's just some sort of energetic quality here. It's a very carnivorous place. Many are called, few are chosen. A lot of people come here with money, with great ideas, and they slink out of here because they can't take the silence, for instance. One of the most common reasons for people to leave here is it's too quiet. People can't deal with their own internal voice and their own internal dialogue. Coming from a city to this place is a major leap, and most people that I encounter can't handle that. And so many times have I heard, it's so quiet here. I can't take it. It's the silence. And I personally feel that the silence is the key here. There is a quality of silence here that I haven't even begun to get close to anywhere else in North America. And I've been in 48 or 50 states, most of them several times. I think when Rinpoches from Tibet come here, when sages and wise men from ancient spiritual lineages are invited here by the Manitou Foundation and Hannah Strong to, if they resonate with the place, go ahead, here's some land, build yourself a sanctuary. The reason why most of them say yeah is because I think of this quality of silence here. That's the key to this place.
The quiet, the isolation, the weather, some of it quite foul, can pounce on the unwary. Katie Snyder knows this. She's lived in the San Luis Valley for 3 decades, raised her family here, runs most of the business in town. And that's why locals call her the Queen of Crestone.
Well, if you've ever seen a young woman from New York City show up in Crestone to be enlightened, you never saw anything so confused and out of her element in your life. People look at this street. They'll stand out here in the middle of the street and say, is this all there is? Where's the town? Is it further up? This is it, lady. And they're completely lost. They have no sense of direction. Or they panic. I've seen people do that. In fact, we'll get at least 3 a summer. I will here in my lodge. You know, people that come from the cities, they want to come out here to find themselves. And they get here, and they can't stand the silence. They can't stand the space and the quiet. the isolation. And believe me, they get here, and they think this is a spiritual mecca. Well, what do they want? Water fountains and people running around in robes? You're not going to get it here. You better know how to work, or you won't last here very long. And that's pretty much how it works. I've seen people come here. They sell everything. Oh, my God, they got to live here. They sell everything they own. They come here, change their name, and give them 6 months. They can't fight their way out of here fast enough, and they don't have anything left. It's sad. It's really sad.
It's early evening, and this is Vespers Baba Ji style, an end-of-the-day sing-along chant to the late Indian guru. I'm seated in half lotus with a small group of carolers inside a domed temple. A statue of the Divine Mother, she's called Murti, is adorned with flowers, flowing robes, and finery. Incense burns. A harmonium churns out the tunes, and you know what? They're great. I hum along at first. A song sheet is offered. I take it. Unfortunately, it's in Sanskrit. I give it a go all the same. And I must have done all right. The resident abbot, Ram Lodi, a woman, smiles, offers a handshake, and says, you're welcome to return anytime. Ram Lodi is a middle-aged woman, confident, well-spoken. And physically, she's a testimonial to the benefits of karma yoga. In her former life, she was a psychologist and a public relations specialist. I ask her about her name. Ram is the name of God, one of the manifestations of Lord Vishnu, she explains. And Lodi is the carrying vessel. a spiritual spin doctor. We laugh. There's a great sense of tranquility here. But the Universal Ashram doesn't profess to have the cure for whatever ails you.
Some time ago, we had some problems here at the ashram with understanding who should come and who should stay, and, you know, these basic questions of who's coming to the ashram and, you know, what's it really here for, as far as, are we here as a mental health place? No, we're not, you know. And is it a healthy place for people to be who are unstable? No, it's not. You know, it's only going to make them more unstable. Because you throw yourself into a schedule such as we, or probably the other spiritual groups, maintain. You know, we're asking people to get up early. We're asking them to meditate, to pray, to sing in an unusual language, in an unusual culture. And then we're asking them to be relatively quiet and focused during the day as they do their service. And it's a quiet place. It's out in the boondocks. And, you know, and then in the evening, what do? We go back to temple and we sing some more. And, you know, the majority of us head for bed because we want to get up early and start our spiritual practices. So there's our big meal is in the middle of the day. So there's just not a lot of distraction. So whatever's going on with somebody tends to bubble up quite strongly. But people who have serious mental imbalances, it's just not the right place for them. And we just can't provide what they need. And it's probably going to only make it very difficult for them.
Ramlati, you mentioned the word experiment, this kind of experiment here that's happening on the side of a mountain. I'd like to talk a bit more in detail about the experiment. Is it working?
Well, I use that word because I guess I've heard it before, and it, you know, it is this idea that many spiritual groups could live together, and if you think of past history, so many wars have been fought over ideologies. And so the idea being that if many of these ideologies could actually live together in peace and cooperation, that maybe it could permeate and start a new way of thinking. Is it working? I think so. What our teacher, Harikam Babaji, taught was that all religions lead to God and to follow the religion that's in your heart. And this is very similar, I believe, to what the experiment is going on here, is that the idea that we, as different spiritual groups, can live in peace and harmony and cooperation, maintaining our own specific spiritual discipline in all purity as possible, but respecting and cooperating and understanding that everybody here is legitimate and it's a great feeling to go into our temple at 4 in the morning and ring my bell and hear the Zen Buddhists with their, whatever their clankers are going, you know, alerting the people that it's coming time for their morning meditation. And then I may hear the Carmelites bells going. And it's a feeling and it's a knowingness that many, many people are getting up early in the morning, taking advantage of that wonderful spiritual time to do their spiritual practice. And to me, it doesn't matter what name of God they're using or what practice they're doing. I know that it's very conducive to the well-being of the whole cosmos. So it's a great feeling.
You're listening to Tapestry on CBC Radio 1. And a profile of Hana Strong and a unique spiritual community in the mountains of Colorado. There are no end of high strange stories attributed to the peculiar qualities of the mountain ranges flanking the San Luis Valley in Colorado. Several years ago, Bill Moyers, a media personality well known to public television viewers in North America, was hiking in the peaks near Crestone with Hana Strong's husband, Maurice. Inexplicably, a bush in front of the two men burst into flames, and it was quickly consumed by the fire. Bill still talks about it, Hana laughs. It's the only mystical experience he's ever had, she says.
And then, of course, you have the most sacred of the mountains, Eastern Mountain, where the light comes into the world, you know, which is where the thunder beings, the beings, you know, the Kachina of thunder and rain, the clouds. I mean, this is a very important mountain that all the young Hopis would go there and seek their visions. So the vision quest ledges, you'll see them all down through the mountains. And anyway, we have the shaman's cave where the energies from the earth and the cosmos meet, and the shaman would sit in this cave and have the energies meet. And of course, through the meeting of these energies with the human form, you could become enlightened. So people came there to get enlightened. People came there to get healed. There's, you know, was spontaneous healing that took place. I mean, it's so powerful, this place. But of course, you have to be open to this power. Not everybody is.
You and I may disagree and quibble about what those things are,
right,
but
right.
I don't quibble at all that the fact there's elevated energies there.
Right. Well, one psychic in Indonesia once told me, he said, there's an energy field on top of the sacred mountain where these UFOs land to charge up. And it's one of the few places on the planet where there is this type of energy that they can use to charge up on.
But let me be the skeptic here.
Well, I mean let me be the skeptic.
Okay, well,
that's
what I'm allowing you for right now. Is, I mean, you know, we're both sort of smiling about this. But there are a lot of people who have come into the valley, the San Luis Valley, expecting to see the Space Brothers land.
Oh, I mean, you have people hunting them down at night. Yes. And, you know, this is people from New York. They have special trips coming out where they spend night after night after night. I mean...
So how do you deal with these kinds of people? Because I know your intention is to work with foundation traditions, and yet you've got these, well, in effect, New Agers coming out with their ideas.
Well, I mean, I never really see them. They work at night.
Some of these people come in here, and their spirituality, believe me, they make it up as they go. And it's so obvious that it does make me angry.
This is Katie Snyder.
I don't tolerate it. I don't put up with that nonsense. And be very careful what you proclaim or state as a fact in front of me, because I'll blow you away with it. I won't put up with that nonsense. There's some very, very fine people that live here. Really wonderful people. But then we get our nuts. And people that just, they're riding on their own ego. They're not riding on anything spiritual. And I just won't put up with it. The Golden Rule. There was an organization that came in here called the Golden Rule. And they stayed just long enough to get themselves in trouble. And then they got out in the middle of the night. That was one.
What do they do?
That's a good question. They claim to not be affiliated, associated with any church organization or any religious group of any kind. But yet they were trying to get tax exemption for their organization. Well, now, wait a minute. There's a bunch of them here. I wish some of these people were paying taxes instead of riding what they're riding. And I'm not going to mention any names there, but you look through the phone book. You can figure it out yourself. It's like the church of what's happening now. You know, get real. We have, and now here's something, I don't know if you can use it or not, but 40% of the population in this surrounding area is on some type of public assistance. You got it?
The rest of the valley, I mean, come on, we're dealing with ranchers, good old boys, and farmers and stuff, and they think that we have orgies on full moons, and that we're all devil worshippers, and don't let your single daughters go up there, and there is, you know, we're in the eyes of the valley, we're quite an unknown factor, and there's a lot of fear out in the valley about what's going on up here, because ignorance tends to breed fear and breed more ignorance, and sometimes stupidity. And unfortunately, the rest of the valley does have a warped view of what is actually going on up here. Yet what's going on up here is so encapsulated in its own sort of little bag here that it's interesting to see how things develop politically, see how things develop socially. And again, the spiritual traditions are the ones that tend to get along better with each other than everybody else.
Christopher O'Brien. Locals have good reason to be twitchy about spiritual newcomers to the San Luis Valley. Over the years, Hannah Strong's Manitou Foundation has been inundated with proposals that call for unusual and downright weird ideas, like a huge pink pyramid.
You know, supposedly this lady channels Commander Ketumi from the planet Arcturus. And Ketumi, the commander, had given them orders to build this pyramid. And this pyramid would have a chamber in it where people would walk through this chamber and they would go from the fourth level of consciousness automatically up to the seventh level of consciousness, which means you're just about enlightened, and that would save the world. And if we weren't for it, it would be our fault if the whole world went down the drain.
You were the great Satan.
That's right. So anyway, so I asked the lady, I said, did Commander Ketumi tell you why it had to be here? Couldn't it be somewhere else? Well, he said that this place was the only place left on the planet that had this particular energy that would support this pyramid, you know, which is the energy of unconditional love, the love energy from the Earth. So anyway, if you put a, you know, big pyramid on top of the heart of the Earth, you know, the Indians do call it the heart of the Earth. I mean, you can control that energy, right? So anyway, that's what they were after.
So what happened?
So we just said, no way.
Crestone and its neighbor, the Baca, in the San Luis Valley of south-central Colorado, is by nature isolated, difficult to get to, and as a consequence, is sparsely populated. There's likely more cattle than people in this valley. But bubbling underfoot is a political debate that promises to make for big trouble in this mountain spiritual paradise. Developers have their eye on one of America's largest aquifers, a huge supply of water that's sorely needed in the American Southwest. At one time, a giant water diversion scheme had been championed by Hannah Strong's husband, Maurice. His idea was to take water from the Baca and send it down to Arizona, New Mexico, and even California. Hannah decided that she should stop this, and she made a public spectacle of herself in a one-woman sit-down protest. Her husband got the message. Maurice Strong did not see the proposal through to fruition. Nobody has, yet.
Well, the only thing I'm worried about is that the water, $14 trillion worth of water, that one Canadian reporter figured out was under this land, you know, will now be held in government hands. California is running out of water. Arizona is running out of water. Texas is running out of water. We have more water in this aquifer than there is in the Oglala aquifer that feeds completely six states. That aquifer is way down, totally polluted. Ours is untapped and clean. So that's the big danger right there.
So you're living in interesting times. What happens next, do you think?
Well, you know, we will do our best to help protect the water, but the water has protected itself very well in the past. Everybody that has tried to touch that water have had extremely bad luck. I mean, you know, with Maurice's company, everybody went broke. People that were worth a lot of money, I mean, they were totally wiped out financially. Some people died of cancer.
So the valley looks after itself, that's what you're
there
saying.
There is a protective force in this place.
One solution to the water problem is to expand the borders around the Great Sand Dunes and have it declared an official national park. That's being debated in Congress, and it's expected the park designation will eventually be approved. But one politician with the power to kill the proposal says he won't support the designation because the site isn't diverse or spectacular enough, unquote. But in America, a nation of wheeler dealers, no only means no for now. Katie Snyder.
We fight like cats and dogs. We argue over the stupidest things. But when something really, really important comes along, you might be amazed what this little tiny community can do. Just like with that AWDI scare we had when they...
What's that mean? I don't know
what that means. That had to do with exporting the water out of the San Luis Valley, just like they did in Owens Valley in California. Well, look what they did to that, and that could very easily happen here. Now, the grassroots of that fight started right here in this community. These people right here.
You, Hanna Strong, are the reason for a lot of people coming in.
But I mean...
But you know where I'm getting at is what happens after Hanna Strong leaves this earthly void?
Well, first of all, it's not my ideas. You know, the ideas come from a higher force. So it's the will of something much higher than, you know, what I am. And I'm just like a facilitator. I just have to make it happen. But it has nothing, you know, I'm just a tool. So whether I'm there or not, it doesn't matter. Every single group came not by me going out inviting them. They came on their own. I have never asked a single group to come. If I had, the place would have looked very differently. It could have been finished by now. But we have just listened to Spirit and let Spirit send whoever is meant to be there.
Do you suspect that there will be enough energy there as it survives you, me, and a whole bunch of other people?
You look at it. Here's one of the most sacred places on earth, with the most beautiful clean air, the most beautiful mountains, the most beautiful land, and clean water. Where in the world can you go and find everything combined in one place? It's so beautiful and so sacred. I mean, instead of going to the Himalayas, you know, and everybody runs to the Himalayas and they get sick and they get bitten and they get malaria and they get this and they get that, here you can come and sit at the Master's feet in the Himalayas of North America. That's what it's all about.
It's the silence of Crestone and the Baca, the big blank of the place that lingers. Many people want to come and stay forever, Hanna Strong told me, but very few can. The absolute quiet is like an invasion of privacy, and I told Hanna Strong as much. Alone with only your thoughts, that can be quite intimidating, I said. Hanna laughed. It's hard work to be yourself, you know. This place, the San Luis Valley, doesn't care who you are or what you were. What you can be spiritually is what the San Luis Valley is all about. And the silence is a tough teacher. And that's Tapestry for this week. We're always interested to learn what's on your mind, what you think about our programming. There's an email address. It's tapestry@toronto.cbc.ca. Our phone number is 416-205-7490. That's 416-205-7490. And regular mail is always appreciated. If you'd like to have an audio cassette of today's broadcast, send a check for $18 to Tapestry, CBC Radio 1, Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. It's kind of like a mantra, isn't it? M5W1E6. The producer of Tapestry is Annalisa Cosma. Dave Field provides technical direction. The executive producer is Richard Handler. I'm Don Hill, and I hope to have the pleasure of your company again next week.